welcome to SciShow Tangents. It's a lightly competitive knowledge showcase starring some of the geniuses that make the YouTube series SciShow happen and sometimes special guests. This week, we have one of those. It's host of YouTube's It's Okay to Be Smart and PBS Digital Studios Hot Mess, Joe Hansen.
Hey, I'm genuinely happy to be here. Not like, even like pretend happy.
Genuinely you're happy smiling. To be here. I can't tell if it's a fake smile or a real
it's
one.
It's real. But
It's been reported that it's real.
I fooled the humans.
Joe, what's your tagline?
My tagline is, I am the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Oh, ooh. We're also joined on the science couch with Joe, Sari Riley.
Hello.
Do you feel like the science couch is leveled up a step?
Oh, yes, 100%.
Oh, wow, thanks.
Joe's like Hank, but better, is what everyone always says.
Hank plus plus.
Sari, what's your tagline?
Blonde for 2 weeks.
We're also joined by Sam Schultz.
Hello.
What's your tagline?
Sun's out, Sam's out.
Stefan is also here. Hi, Stefan Chin.
Hello.
What's your tagline?
Juicy fruit mongoose. Mm. What does that mean? Nobody knows.
Sounds tasty. And I'm Hank Green. My tagline is, the difference between up and down is left. Every week on Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts. We're playing for glory. We're also playing for Hank Bucks, which we have rewarded from week to week. Sam, I think, is still in the lead.
Mm-mm.
Oh, I don't know.
Not anymore. You are now. I had a very bad episode last episode, and I lost a bunch of points, and you are 1 point ahead of me.
Wow.
So you have 40 points. I have 39 points. Sari has 33. Mm. That doesn't seem right. Stefan has 35. So,
I mean,
yikes.
By all the statistical analyses, I'm bad at this game.
But you know what? Joe has 0 points.
Hey,
we know who the real
loser
is.
Last.
We do everything we can to stay on topic here at Tangents, but we're bad at that, which is why we call it Tangents. So if the rest of the team deems a tangent unworthy, we will force you to give up a Hank Buck. Tangent with care, everybody. Now, as always, we introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem this week from Sari.
Oops, we say when we spill some juice or find some poops our pup produced. Mm. Oops, there's molasses flooding the streets. Oops, that sinkhole is swallowing trees. But sometimes our messes are more than they seem. Oopses on oopses for centuries. Waste that builds up or oil that spills or space debris that orbits us still. So it's on us to make this our hill, to learn and to care for our home until our messes are less messy. That's what we can do. We're in it together, so you know. Come through.
Oh, nice.
Very
Let's
sexy.
Come through.
Yeah. I'm inspired.
We should have put that on Twitter, and maybe everybody will be like, right, we should do something yeah. about climate change.
Sari fixed it.
Fixed
the world.
Yeah.
And at least we'll be on a hill for when the sea level rises.
That's right. Good, too.
So, Sari, what's a mess?
I, like, Googled science plus mess to see if anything would come up. Uh-huh. Nothing did.
It's just entropy.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like messes can be accidental most of the time, but mm-hmm. like also intentional because
I can make a mess on purpose.
Yeah. You can go and rampage and not. Are you making a mess
Please
now?
Don't.
Oh, no.
Oh.
I have to pick that up.
But is that a mess? Because I feel like if I have one thing that's out of place, that's not a mess. But if I have clothes across my whole floor, can't walk across my apartment, then that's a proper mess.
Mm-hmm.
How many items constitute a mess?
I think it's like a per unit of area situation.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And relative to the size of the thing that's making the mess.
You guys ever look up etymology of words?
Oh, yeah. Love it.
So I'm super nerdy. So I looked up mess. And it turns out it was always just about eating. Like a mess was just like a meal.
Right.
Which is why soldiers eat in a mess hall. And then apparently somebody mixed something together to feed to pigs. And they're like, we're going to call that a mess now. And that's how it happened.
So are we in a mess? Is the world a mess?
Yeah. So like extending the like mess where like I'm going to step on a Lego out to sort of like the conceptual idea of a mess.
Uh-huh.
Where we are in a mess. This is a situation that requires action to get out of. Mm. It's just sort of like the general colloquial
I like that.
Mess
yeah.
thing.
That's why I think like the universe getting more disordered isn't really a mess.
Right.
Because we did all the stuff that we're in a mess about. The universe is just like being.
Hmm. Yeah. So it's not so much an entropy thing. I feel like we're well defined, which means that it's time for one of our panelists has prepared 3 science facts for our education and enjoyment, but only one of them is real. The rest of us have to figure out either by deduction or wild guess which is the true fact. If they do, they get a Hank Buck. If they don't, the presenter gets a Hank Buck. This week, it's Sam, which I feel like you've put yourself in a situation where you're more likely to get more Hank Bucks.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Sam, It's time for you to present your facts.
All right. On an unseasonably warm January day in Boston in the year 1919, a molasses tank belonging to the Purity Distilling Company, recently filled to capacity with warm molasses, burst open and let loose a wave of the sticky stuff that traveled through the streets of Boston's North End at about 35 miles an hour. It destroyed buildings. It hurled trucks around. It killed 21 people. It injured 150 more people. Jesus. And it killed, like, tons of animals and stuff, too. Horses. People talked about horses dying a lot in all the newspaper clipping.
Yeah,
because they were, like, thrashing around, and it was apparently very horrible. So the distilling company claimed that the tank was sabotaged by anarchists, but scientists hypothesize now that carbon dioxide rising from the warm molasses coupled with how badly the tank was built was what the thing was.
Mm-hmm.
So, cool story, but that's not the only molasses-based disaster in human history.
Ooh.
So, all of the industrial spills I'm going to read are basically real, but only one of them was actually a molasses accident.
Okay.
Number one. In 2013, an underwater molasses pipeline burst off the...
Okay, keep going.
Let me finish. An underwater molasses pipeline burst off the coast of Honolulu, spilling thousands of barrels of molasses that smothered local fish and coral. Number two. In 1800s London, distilleries all over the city were having a little fun and competing to build the biggest distilling vat. That all went terribly wrong in 1814 when somebody finally built a vat that was too big and it burst, spilling 1,500 barrels of molasses and killing 8 people. Or in 2000, a distillery warehouse in Kentucky caught fire, sending a flood of flaming molasses down a hill into the woods and a nearby river. No humans were killed, but 228,000 fish died along a 66-mile stretch of river.
Mm, wow.
Which one was molasses?
Wow.
So my big question here is, what is molasses?
Okay.
And why do we have so much of it? Because in my head, molasses is like a something you put like 1 teaspoon of into like a cookie ingredient. Like, well, why do they need so much molasses in Boston and Hawaii?
Well, okay, I'll explain the Boston one, though. It was used for distilling.
Oh, for like then, making especially. Booze?
Yeah, and so the company was trying to beat Prohibition, which passed the day after the flood, I believe, Prohibition passed. And a year later, it was going to go into effect. Mm. So they were racing against the clock to get as much molasses as they could and make as much booze as they could before they couldn't do it anymore.
So they filled the molasses tank up too high because they were like, we need to stockpile all the molasses before they stop the shipments.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what molasses is?
That is a great question that I probably should have read a little
bit. It's a byproduct, right?
What?
It's a byproduct.
I know this.
Oh,
sugar?
Please.
I grew up in a town called Sugarland, Texas.
Uh-huh.
Like, they literally made sugar there.
Oh, it's not just because it's cute?
Now, so when you make sugar, like from raw sugar, it comes out like really browny and, you know, kind of like brown sugar, like mm-hmm. you bake with. And if you extract the brown part out of that, it's sticky molasses and you get the white sugar crystals.
It's the molasses brown is of
like
brown
the
sugar?
Sticky, raw, cooked.
So it's all the flavor parts of brown sugar.
It's everything that tastes good about brown sugar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
If you ever run out of brown sugar, just put molasses in some white sugar. But who keeps molasses around?
I actually have, weirdly enough, recently discovered that I have 2 bottles of molasses. So I should just get into the whiskey business, apparently.
So what about the Hawaiian economy mandates a pipeline
underwater
molasses?
There's something about this is true. So what do they have an underground pipeline of in Hawaii? Do they do oil exploration in Hawaii? Is there like natural gas there? What is it, pineapples? Underground pineapple pipeline?
Spam delivery.
It's just spam. It's just like a pipe of spam.
It comes from the mainland. Yeah.
Like, are the Hawaiian islands close enough together that it's just easier to like lay pipe and then you can like, you just turn a faucet on and it comes from the central like molasses distribution hub, you know?
Like pneumatic tubes.
Yeah, like a pneumatic system.
Yeah.
Put your pancake under it.
So overview, we have 2013 underwater molasses pipeline burst off the coast of Honolulu. 1800s London distillery competitions ended horribly when 1,500 barrels spilled. Or number 3, in Kentucky, this was recently, flaming molasses killed schools of fish in the nearby river. It was flaming?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
How is it on fire?
You could catch pretty much anything on fire. You try hard enough.
You just increase the amount of oxygen. I guess it's sugar. Sugar is flammable.
They did an oopsie and it got them.
Just a little oopsie.
Yeah.
So the London one was people kept building bigger and bigger vats. That seems like a very human thing to do. Like, bet you can't build a bigger vat and then like, doing that to
and
the
they're
point
like, so far, none of them have burst.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the flaming molasses.
Flaming Kentucky molasses.
That sounds great.
They definitely make whiskey there, so they would have molasses.
And if molasses is going to be on fire, it's going to be in Kentucky.
I will, to diversify our answers, I'll go with vats because I think it would be equally
that seems
the
likely
other,
to me.
The last two.
I got to go with vats, too. It just seems like such a British thing to do to be to have vat offs.
I can't imagine that there is an underwater molasses pipeline. If that's the real one, you deserve the points. So I'm gonna go with the London distillery competitions.
Ooh. Oh boy. Okay, so it was the underwater molasses.
What? Oh, no, no.
Holy heck.
I have so many more questions.
I couldn't find too many answers about why exactly they started this pipeline.
What?
But molasses is unregulated, so you can do whatever you want with molasses.
Sam is so far in the lead right now.
So they would pump molasses from the molasses factory to tankers offshore. And nobody ever had to come see if this was okay or like if the pipes were in order or anything. And one day they just burst and killed everything instantly, basically. It cleaned itself up really fast. And the fact that there was sugar left kind of helped things come back. But like instant death for the coral and the fish that were in the area.
Not a good way to go.
No.
Not boiling molasses, we've learned.
I like still can't believe that there's a molasses pipe.
We like, all would have like laughed together when you said that.
This is something that I should have known about the world. That there's this big
It's the silliest thing to pipe around.
I was picturing like from island to island, but it makes sense to go out to a ship.
To boats.
Ah.
So the London distillery thing. I admit this is kind of a bullshit trailer fail, but I found so many good messes. The London distillery thing was more, it was a brewery. And so they'd build these big barrels, basically, or like distilling vats, and people would come from miles around to see their cool, huge distilling vats, and they just took it too far. And the
best mess
ever. I'll come from miles around. I just need to see a bigger vat.
Yeah, well, there was a TV back then.
The industrialization of our economy is amazing. I want to see a big container.
You could go see the giant vat and then get a bumper sticker about that.
What are you going to put your bumper sticker on?
Your horse?
Your buggy.
Yeah, your buggy. Yeah. Or your horse. They could brand your horse with
that. That's the old biggest ball of twine. You just pull up to it and then they burn your horse.
Instead of like pressed pennies, that's how you collected things.
Just your horse is in more and more pain.
And then the Kentucky thing was a bourbon. A bourbon storage facility or an aging facility, and it caught on fire. Nobody knows how. It's kind of it seemed kind of mysterious.
Yeah.
And the fiery whiskey swept down into the woods and killed a bunch of fish.
That one seems like anarchists.
Yeah, that does seem more like anarchists.
I like the idea that the anarchists were like, we're going to target the vat of molasses. That's the thing we thought of.
They said that they were trying, the company made it all up. But they said they were trying to steal the molasses because somehow you could turn molasses into some kind of like gunpowder or something like that.
Oh.
There's some kind of munition you could make with molasses. But the court didn't believe them and they paid $9 million to the victims of the molasses flood.
As someone who lived in Boston for 4 years, I took a tour and they were like, you can still smell the molasses around here. I don't know if you could. I have a bad sense of smell, but it was a big placebo effect because everyone else there was like, oh, it does smell sweet in the water, in the air here. So who knows? When you go to Boston, go sniff
Boston.
Yeah, go sniff the Boston.
Don't sniff Boston.
When I was in Boston, even before I found out about that, I thought Boston was quite sticky. And then when I heard that, I was like, God, that makes sense now.
Next up, we're going to take a short break and then the fact off. Welcome back. Hank Buck totals. Sarah's got a point because of science poem. Nobody else has any points except for Sam, who has four.
Oofa.
Oofa.
A whole pipeline full of points.
Yeah.
You're pumping them right to me.
Delivering straight from the big island of Hawaii to Sam's pockets.
From the idiot factories that are your brains.
Wow!
Sam, we just made some oopsies. Yeah. You profited.
You really did.
Now it is time for the Fact Off. Joe versus Stefan. You're going to present two amazing facts, and the rest of us are going to decide which fact was the most mind-blowing. And we each have a Hank Buck to award to the one that we liked the most. And we're going to decide who goes first by the person who least recently cleaned their room.
Least recently?
So whose room is messier, basically? I can't actually quantify whose room is messier, but I know who least... Like, when did you last clean your bedroom, Stefan?
I cleaned my whole place on Saturday because I had some people over.
I cleaned on Sunday for Mother's Day.
Oh, nice.
Not to place this in time or anything.
Because you live with your mom?
Yeah.
Because I live with my mom.
She was like, clean your room.
I live with a mom, not my mom. Yeah.
So I guess that means that Joe gets to go first.
Okay, so in 1963, the Earth looked kind of like Saturn for just a little while because the U.S. government decided that it would be a super good idea to launch like a billion tiny copper wires into space and put a ring around the Earth. And they made a huge mess in the process. Spoiler. Okay, so if you go back to the late 50s, there are no communication satellites, right? Mm-hmm. We hadn't really figured out shooting stuff into space and not blowing it up. So for long-range communications, like all you can do is undersea cables or like some weird radio, but like the Soviets can cut your cables and the sun can mess up these long-range radio broadcasts. So people had tried bouncing radio off the moon and like floating these big silver balloons and bouncing radio off that. And that didn't work because, of course, that's not going to work. And so one guy's like, we'll put a ring of copper around the Earth and then we can bounce radio waves off it. And they cut these little wires just so they would be like perfectly little micro antennas. So NASA was basically operating under this idea that's like, oh, space is really big. We can do anything up there. It'll be fine. Spoiler, it wasn't fine. Radio astronomers are like, this is a horrible idea. The National Academy of Sciences is like, please don't do this. So, of course, NASA's like, 1961, we launched the rocket up carrying these needles, and things immediately go wrong. It doesn't deploy the needles correctly. Nobody knows what happens to it. It's just floating around the Earth somewhere. In come the Soviets, and they're like, please don't try that again. We're begging you. You're messing up space.
Russia is like, America, you're being irresponsible.
And they're like, well, let's do it again.
Oh, yeah?
So in 1963, they launch another one of these things, 20 kilograms of copper needles. It successfully deploys, and sure enough, they bounce radio waves off of these copper needles, send a transcontinental radio message across the United States, and then, like, the next year, they launch the first communications satellite. Everybody's like, these things will just re-enter. It'll be fine. Mm-hmm. No problem. Not going to have any permanent damage. But they didn't realize that something called cold welding could happen in space, and all of these copper wires clumped together, and many of them have not re-entered. Like, they're a small percentage of our current space junk problem, but we absolutely left part of the ring around the planet up there orbiting the planet as a very big but cool mess.
What kinds of messages are they bouncing off of these? Because I feel like if it's just this ring, like... You could pretty easily intercept that.
Well,
like,
are these still, top secret? You could make a coded message, though.
Yeah, I guess
so. Encrypted radio was probably a thing. I think it is. It still is. I'm sure armies know how to do this stuff.
Yeah. But once you put it up there, like, the Soviets can use it too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it's a proprietary system. Like, anybody can bounce a radio signal off a needle.
Definitely. And this thing was going around, like, the North to South Pole, like a vertical ring around there. Because they wanted to use it for transatlantic communication to talk to our allies.
So they fused into, like, chunks up there
chunks.
Can do damage to things that would hit them?
Each of them was, like, the size of a postage stamp in length. And so in the vacuum cold of where they were in space, they just, something called cold welding, like metal on metal, can just fuse to each other up there in the weirdness that is not being on Earth.
What if I got hit by one? What would happen?
If you were in orbit and you got hit by one, it would rip straight through your body
immediately
with no warning, and you would be very hurt. You could be either very dead or very hurt, but nothing in between, outside of that range. This is basically why the United Nations like established rules for what you're allowed to do in space.
The first thing when they were like, people were like, we can do whatever, and the UN's finally like, okay, you can't. We thought it would be okay to just let you be responsible, and you proved us wrong.
Is there just another capsule still up there with a bunch of these needles? Like, has that been re-entry or burned up?
Yes, the first one. They believe the first one might have fallen apart or fragmented, and they don't really know what happened to those. Mm-hmm. So that might have been some of the ones they're picking up on radar today. They got special space radar to look for this stuff.
I just imagine that, like, it just left the solar system, and like some aliens picked it up and they opened it up and they're like, they got glitter bombed basically. Damn it, we can't get these out.
It's a pretty big mess
all over space.
Is it the biggest mess? No,
I mean,
and maybe in terms of like square miles. Yeah.
I want to reiterate that in the meantime, we have put so much more stuff in space that is up there. Like, this is a small fraction of all of the other space junk.
Yeah.
But it's the weirdest space.
Stefan, that was a good fact. Can you do it one better?
So my hot mess is about the flushable wipes industry.
Oh, that's a really good one.
It's a pretty big mess. So there's this team at Ryerson University in Toronto that had in their lab, they set up like a toilet with all like the piping that's attached and it flushes. And they wanted to test a bunch of different like wipe products and things, some of which were flushable or labeled as flushable, and see if they could be processed by like sewer systems. The two main things are like within a certain number of flushes, the product has to clear like the piping. It's like 20 meters of pipe with a couple like 90 degree bends. All the products did that. Like within five flushes, like everything was through the piping. But then they do like a disintegration test where they sort of slosh the water around in a box. It's all very specific, like the number of degrees that you tilt the box to like,
sure,
so that it matches like what you would experience in the sewer system. And so their standard was that it needs to disintegrate within 30 minutes to avoid having danger of clogging. And zero of the products out of 101 passed this test. I thought there'd be at least like one on the market maybe that would like
actually
do the thing, but none of them did. It makes sense. I hadn't really thought about flushable wipes before looking into it for this, but like these are causing problems around sewer systems around the world. So in Toronto, where the university that they did this test, in the city of Toronto, they get 10,000 calls annually about blockages that are related to the flushing of various items that should not be flushed. And have you all heard of the Fatberg thing?
Oh, I just Googled it. I was like, we're going to talk about Fatbergs now.
Oh, yeah. Fatbergs are just like these giant thousands of pound collections of like grease and animal fat and these wipes, and they get stuck together and they clog up sewer systems and they cost tons of money to remove.
And also tons of just like life, like human beings have to go down there and spend their time removing a Fatberg.
Yeah.
So is it the wipes that the Fatbergs are coalescing around? Like, I
think it's wipes and other just anything that's non-biodegradable. But I think wipes are one of the more common things that go down there. But like Q-tips, like diapers, like all kinds of things that people flush.
What kind of toilet can you flush a diaper in? Like some like rocket toilet? Aren't there like people who monitor advertising where people would get in trouble for saying these are flushable?
They're flushable. You can flush them. They are able to be flushed.
There's not like a solid regulation about it. It's just like there's this industry test that has a less strict standard to be able to say this is flushable. And it's like, it has to disintegrate within 3 hours or something, but they're hitting the systems in faster time than 3 hours. And so like, it needs to disintegrate faster to avoid clogging.
All right, people, the solution to this problem, like a spray bottle next to the toilet.
A bidet. It's called a bidet.
Well, we're not all kings here.
What are you spraying?
You just dampen that toilet paper that you already have in the bathroom. Oh. If you need something soft and
that
moist.
Makes sense. Then the toilet paper dissolves
that dissolves too fast.
Yeah. Double ply, wrap it a few times.
Some quad ply.
I'm never wiping
the good
again.
Stuff.
I'm just taking a shower afterward. That's the solution. All right, it's time for us to distribute our Hank Bucks, you guys.
Ooh.
I knew about both of these facts. I think I learned more from Joe because I didn't know about the two different missions, and I didn't know that this is what spurred the UN into actually starting to regulate our space.
What were they doing before then?
I don't know, like solving smallpox.
Keeping peace on Earth, just minor details.
I also want to give mine to Joe. They're both very good facts, but I had heard of Fatbergs before.
I think Stefan's done an important service for the world.
It's true. It's true. Stefan's is a better service for people.
Yeah, so I'm going to give mine to Stefan.
Ooh,
yeah.
Thanks. Okay.
And now it's time to Ask the Science Couch. We have got listener questions for our couch of finely honed scientific minds, which does not include me, which is wonderful. And that question will be read to us by Sam.
At the Beekeeper asks, is there any evidence in the fossil record of man-made messes? Will things like the BP oil spill show up in the fossil record in a few millennia?
There will be, but like not a few millennia, like millennia of millennia. Takes a long time for things to fossilize and for the ground to squish and find and create those geologic layers. So go millions of years into the future, aliens show up. I guess they're geologists. And they start digging around and figuring out what was on this planet. Humans have been around 200,000 years or something like that. Like that's going to be a paper thin layer in the geologic record, but there will be some weird stuff. There is actually a mineral made from like all of the paint that fell at automobile factories.
I just Googled it. Fordite.
Fordite.
What?
Which will be compressed, and people will probably think this is some precious gem from like all of the layers of paint that went down upon each other and made these like, oh, they're beautiful. Google Fordite. One of my favorites is, so our cars have catalytic converters. Everybody knows it helps keep heavy metals out of the atmosphere. There's still a lot of heavy metals and pollution that comes out of your tailpipe, though. They'll see a network of heavy metals like a river system on a map of a continent and not be able to figure out what was there.
Whoa.
From all of the pollution that gets distributed from cars on our highways and road systems. Mm. My final favorite one, you mentioned geosynchronous orbits earlier, and those decay so slowly that it won't be a fossil like in the geologic record, but if aliens fly up to Earth and we're long gone millions of years in the future, like they could very well bump into a geosynchronous satellite that's up there today, and they could just be these weird like techno fossils orbiting our Earth.
They're so totally cool. Gonna be there. Some of them probably already are techno fossils. Yeah. If we brought one down, we'd be like, look at this, look at how they did this.
What I thought was fascinating is just how many minerals there are that are either originated because of humans or like mostly because of humans. But a paper in 2017 said there were 208 mineral species that were because of humans in some way.
How do we make a mineral?
Yeah.
Like on purpose?
Yeah, on purpose or accidentally. So Portlandite, I think, is one of them. And it's a compound in Portland cement or concrete.
Oh,
I thought it would be fossilized beard wax.
Yeah. Or a lot of these are in like abandoned mines, like on the sides of the tunnels. They're just formations of like crystalline compounds that have a unique chemical composition and crystal structure that we just haven't seen before. From the way, like the tools that we've used to dig out these mines and the residues that we've left behind, new compounds form that otherwise were unlikely to form naturally. There was one that was formed in storage cabinets in museums, which I thought was really cool, called chalcocite. It's just this mineral that forms on rock and fossil specimens and pottery shards in oak museum storage cabinets. Like,
specifically oak. I love that.
Yeah, that sounds very much like something that people who work at museums would figure out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they notice it and it's like, what's this one of my specimens?
I bet we can science that.
Yeah.
So will things like oil spills and stuff show up in geologic records or...
I don't know about oil spills. There's not a lot of research.
I mean, oil is broken down by microbes and like, I don't know why they would eat it. There's so many better things to eat. So that's how they clean up oil spills today is with that stuff. It's those, it starts organic. It enters the chain of life a lot better than all this weird stuff that we're putting out there.
Right. So and the other thing that they talk about is for sort of like the definition of when like humans will be like very visible in the fossil record is like a layer of radioactive materials.
Right.
Because we did a bunch of nuclear tests.
Whoopsies.
And all of a sudden there will be...
we're on purposes.
Yeah, okay.
Not oil exactly, but some people think that there might end up being plastic conglomerates within the fossil record. So they're these formations that are called plastiglomerates. They're like this new type of, in quotes, stone that was found on Hawaiian beaches, where it's like plastic, beach sediment, a lot of volcanic rocks like basalt and debris that when people make campfires or stuff on trashy beaches, they form these like stones, essentially, these very sturdy things. And we're not sure what's going to happen to them over time, because generally people think over like a lot of geologic time, plastics will be reduced back to oil-like compounds. But these conglomerate materials, we have no idea what's going to happen. Like, they could get buried and over millennia of millennia stick around in some way.
I'm super not happy those exist.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the first thought I had was like, that's actually maybe a good way to like not have as much plastic floating around. Because if plastic's like inside of a stone, I'm fine with that. If it's floating on the surface of the water looking like a jellyfish for a sea turtle to eat, bad. So what you got to do is make more plastic rocks so it sinks to the bottom of the ocean where nobody can eat it.
Can you throw it in a volcano?
Throw it in a volcano! That's the solution.
Can you throw it in a volcano?
You can throw pretty much anything in a volcano.
Cool. Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, if you throw it in a volcano, it's practically the same thing as just lighting it on fire.
We've come up with a lot of solutions here today.
Yeah, too bad we have more problems.
We've barely scratched the surface of messes at large here.
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about the fun little messes. There's, oh gosh, oh boy. Let's not talk about the big ones.
Just throw them all in volcanoes.
Yeah.
Can we throw climate change into a volcano?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You can, like, cause the eruption of supervolcanoes so that ash coats the earth and then reduces the temperature drastically.
Volcanoes seem to be the solution to all our problems, though.
Yeah, Joe versus the volcano. You just got to get Joe to jump in the volcano. All the problems will be solved.
Joe jumps in the volcano?
Not me. It's a character played by Tom Hanks.
I know that. He doesn't jump in the volcano, though.
He tries. In the volcano, and then the volcano spits him out, and then he floats home on his luggage. Sorry, spoilers.
What the heck?
You guys haven't seen it. Joe versus the volcano is a fucking masterpiece.
Oh. It really is. It is fantastic.
He has very nice luggage. The final Hank Buck scores.
It's important to the movie.
I am coming out with -1 point because of my Joe versus the volcano tangent.
Oh, no. I was going to cut it out.
Sari has 1 point from your science poem. Joe gets 2. Congratulations.
Nice.
Stefan, you got 1 point. Mm-hmm. And Sam ended up with 4 points, our leader, because no one could believe that there were underwater molasses pipes.
I still don't believe it.
If you want to ask your questions to the Science Couch, you can follow us on Twitter at @SciShowTangents, where we will tweet out topics for upcoming episodes every week. Thank you to @SensiBleb and @Shailen G and everybody else who tweeted us your questions this week. If you like this show and you want to help us out, it's easy to do that. You can leave us a review wherever you listen. That's very helpful, and it helps us know what you like about the show. You can also tweet out your favorite moment from this episode, which will also help us know what you like about the show. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, you can just tell people about us. Thank you for joining us. I have been Hank Green.
I've been Stefan Chin.
I've been Sam Schultz.
I've been Sari Riley.
And I have been Joe Hansen.
SciShow Tangents is a co-production of Complexly and WNYC Studios. It's created by all of us and produced by Sam Schultz and Caitlin Hoffmeister. Our sound is by Joseph Tuna Medish. Our social media organizer is Victoria Bongiorno. And we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted.
But one more thing. Okay, so you know that bone called the coccyx?
Mm-hmm.
It's a tailbone, right? Well, it's called your tailbone because that's where a tail would be like millions and millions of years ago. But the coccyx gets its name from the Greek word for the cuckoo bird, which is coccyx, because it looks like a cuckoo's beak when anatomists were taking people apart in ancient Greece. And a French anatomist named Jean Roland the Younger made a study of anatomy with a cuckoo call fart joke in it, when he said the sound of farts leave the anus and dash against this bone, and it sounds like the call of a cuckoo.
You got all the butts in there. Tailbone, anus, farts.